This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Scientists have predicted climate change could lead to instability within some nations and war. In a report released in October 2014, the U.S. Pentagon said the same thing. Now we have the first peer-reviewed study saying climate wars are not just for the future, one may have already happened in Syria. We have the lead author of that paper with us, Dr. Colin Kelly. Colin is a postdoctoral fellow with the Geography Climate Hazards Group at the University of California, Santa Barbara. Colin, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you very much.
What stimulated you to take on this research into the role of climate change in the Syrian civil war?
Well, it began with some other papers that I had done earlier in my PhD when I was studying the Greater Mediterranean, but then also the Eastern Mediterranean. And what we discovered was that the Eastern Mediterranean is kind of a distinct region in that it doesn't have much influence from these low-frequency natural variability, such as what's happening over the Atlantic or the Pacific, et cetera. And what that meant for this was that it was a more clear human-induced trend in this region that was kind of emerging from the natural variability. And that's not happening in a lot of other places. So, you know, shortly after the uprising occurred in 2011 in Syria, we knew there had been a very severe drought there that had occurred. So we kind of said, well, you know, how severe, how unusual was this drought, and how was it influenced by this long-term trend in precipitation? So that's kind of how we got started.
And I also read through a paper from the 2011 study from NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. They found, quote, human-caused climate change is a major factor in more frequent Mediterranean droughts. How did they and your team eliminate the things you were talking about, those natural variables like the North Atlantic Oscillation? Why aren't those sufficient causes for the drier winters in those countries you studied?
What we saw for the Eastern Mediterranean was these trends that we were seeing were long-term trends. This is like 85, 100-year trends. Now, the North Atlantic Oscillation, what's happening over the Atlantic, has multi-decadal variability, which means it'll go up for 30 years and go down for 30 years, et cetera. But it doesn't have the same kind of low-frequency variability that we were seeing in these trends. So that leads us to conclude that in the absence of any kind of natural variability explanation for these very long-term trends, it does match the time evolution of CO2 and what we would expect for human-induced change during that period of time.
Colin, please tell us what happened to Syrian farmers starting in 2006.
Well, when the drought hit, and it was the most severe drought in the observed record, and came shortly after two other multi-decadal droughts, one in the 80s and one in the 90s, this drought was so severe that the agriculture collapsed in the Northeast. It's referred to as the breadbasket region because they're strongly dependent on the wheat production there. Syria had actually gotten to the point that wheat production represented 25% of its gross domestic product. And then after the drought hit, the agriculture collapsed, and that GDP took a huge hit. Syria went from being a net exporter of wheat to a net importer of wheat. And basically all of these farmers, in an effort to survive, picked up their families, abandoned their villages, and went to the cities in Syria's west to try and make a living.
And you found government agricultural policy may have contributed to the problems from the drought. Could you tell us about that?
Sure. Like I said, they had a very strong emphasis on the wheat production, which had served them well for a couple of decades. But what happened was they were basically, the population was going up dramatically, you know, even since, you know, the last several decades. In the 1950s, total population of Syria was roughly 5 million, and it went up to 20 million recent years. So what you had was a reduction in precipitation, and the groundwater was steadily going down. So it was less of a supply for water and more of a demand for water. And so basically the consequences of the agricultural collapse were pretty dire.
Surely this drought is hitting parts of Turkey as well, and they have loads of refugees now from Iraq and Syria. Why don't we see more social unrest there?
Well, as we talk about a little bit in the paper, because that's a question that a lot of people ask, you know, why Syria? And the thing is that Syria had a dramatically high vulnerability at the time of the drought. Turkey and some of the surrounding areas, Iraq included, were not as dependent on their wheat production. And basically, you know, all of these countries have different governments, different economies, different levels of vulnerability and resilience. So that in this case, Syria's vulnerability was acute, and so they could not withstand the multi-year drought.
And as I understand it, Colin Kelly, your team doesn't say climate change directly caused the Syrian civil war, but acted as a catalyst. Can you explain that?
Sure. When we looked at these long-term trends and we saw that the recent drought was the most severe drought in the observed record, what we wanted to try and do was to quantify how much more severe the drought was because of the long-term trend. So we took these observations and we basically removed the long-term trend and we determined that it was 2 to 3 times more likely that you would get a drought of this severity when you include the trend versus when you don't. And then we went to the global climate models to see if they corroborated that. And we compared experiments that had only natural variability to experiments that had the observed forcing, CO2 rise, et cetera, during the 20th century. And the models had a surprisingly consistent result with the observations, which is, you know, that it's 2 to 3 times more likely to get these severe droughts.
Can you describe for us the long-term trends that could make the Mediterranean countries and the Middle East even drier and hotter in the future?
Sure. What we saw was not only a significant downward trend in precipitation, but also an increase in the surface temperature, which basically means for the Fertile Crescent, which gets all of its rainfall in a six-month period, November through April, but gets all of its evaporation during what you can think of as the six-month summer. So this is serving to dry out the soil, essentially, and reduce the soil moisture. And then in winter, it acts as a double whammy because it's reduced precipitation. So both of these things are acting together to strongly dry this region. In addition, the atmospheric sea level pressure has been steadily rising. And what that does is it changes the circulation. It alters where the winds are coming from and affects the moisture that typically comes in from the Mediterranean Sea.
Is the Mediterranean Sea warming?
From what I've seen, yeah, the Mediterranean Sea is warming and increasing in its evaporation, which means it's become increasingly salty as well.
Have you had any contact with Syria or feedback regarding your study?
You know, that's a good question because yesterday or the day before yesterday, I got an email from a scientist who is, I can't remember which university, but basically he said that he is a Syrian national, and he was actually in Syria when the drought hit, and he was at a conference, and he and some other scientists were telling the Syrian government, basically, that this was a big problem, this drought, and that the resilience to this drought was not, you know, what it needed to be. And then at the end of the drought, obviously, when this chain of events occurred and the uprising happened. So he said that he was not at all surprised by this, that it had been predicted to a certain degree by these other scientists at the time. And so he agreed with the study, which was a nice confirmation.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith talking with Dr. Colin Kelly at the University of California Climate Hazards Group. Another party that ends up with this end of the stick is the United Nations and the various charities trying to feed millions of refugees from the Syrian civil war, and I guess from the drought as well. What do they say about the impact of climate change in the region?
Well, I would say, yeah, you're certainly right. I mean, you know, the United Nations and the Red Cross, and certainly they have limited resources. And so in this region in particular, it's, you know, with the ongoing conflict and et cetera, it makes it increasingly difficult for them to have their humanitarian aid. One of the other countries that I started working on recently is Yemen. And Yemen is a country that has rampant famine. It's one of the most famine-prone countries in the world. And it was also one of the Arab Spring uprising countries. And the government has recently collapsed or deposed there. So there are a lot of similarities to be drawn between Yemen and Syria, even though there are some differences in the rainfall, et cetera.
I'm glad you raised that because I was wondering if your work could be expanded to some of the other revolutions in North Africa. I'm thinking of Egypt and even more the continuing civil war in Libya. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, we have taken a brief look at some of those countries, some of the other Arab Spring countries. But one of the things that we're really looking for is to see whether there's any kind of a trend before the violence erupted. Now, there are a lot of reasons, even in the Syrian case, why an uprising can occur. And a lot of times it's just a question of how all of these factors come together to produce that. In some of these other countries, it looks like there was less of a climate change influence. And so it was the other factors that were more important in the conflicts erupting in these other countries. But there's still a lot of research to be done on that.
And I've seen maps of projections for the impact of climate change in a longer range, perhaps hundreds of years, and they show a huge desert linking up across the subtropics, including North Africa and the Middle East, but extending into China and maybe even parts of North and South America. Have we already started on that process?
It appears so. I mean, a lot of the predictions by the global climate model for the 21st century, globally, essentially, is that wet places are expected to get wetter and dry places are expected to get drier, which is bad news for arid and semi-arid countries already that are strained for resources, because if we continue on this trajectory that we're on now, and we've already started to see evidence of these kinds of things, then it will only continue to get worse during the century.
Another party that's interested in this, of course, is the military. They have done a report, the Pentagon has, about climate change being a threat multiplier. Have you heard from them at all?
I haven't heard from them, but I've seen a lot of the quotes by them. And there's some other strong statements to go along with it. But I think a threat multiplier is a great way to characterize it, because as we characterize it in our paper, it's not saying that climate change is going to cause a lot of these things, but rather that it's going to be a significant contributing factor. So you have to consider all the factors, but certainly climate change is going to act to make these situations worse.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners, perhaps something I've missed about your research and this paper?
I don't think so. It's just like you said before, I wanted to stress that what we're saying is that climate change is just a piece to this puzzle. In this case, it served to exacerbate what was already a natural multi-year drought, making it the worst drought, and this set about it. Basically a catalytic chain of events, the agricultural collapse and the mass migration and this huge increase in population in urban areas all before the uprising.
We've been talking about the role of climate change in the Syrian Civil War. The paper published in the Proceedings of the National Academy, or PNAS, is titled Climate Change in the Fertile Crescent and Implications of the Recent Syrian Drought. You can find links to all that in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.info. Our guest is Dr. Colin Kelly from the University of California, Santa Barbara. Colin, you've had huge media coverage of this paper. Thank you for finding time to talk with us on Radio EcoShock.
Certainly, my pleasure.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.